Hello and welcome to Birdies and Beer, the unique lifestyle podcast that features all things golf and craft beer. Recording from the Business Radio X studios outside Atlanta, here is Tim Stoltz.
Thank you, Mike. That was Mike Salmon, Business Radio X. Welcome to everybody to another episode of Birdies and Beer. I am pleased to be joined in studio by my Birdies and Beer partner, Jason Grady.
Good afternoon.
By Director of Operations of Atlanta Beer Festivals, Mike DiLeonardo. Sorry, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
And the owner of Good Word Brewing and Public House, Todd DiMatteo.
That's right. Howdy.
Hello, Todd. And Todd, you have brought gifts today.
I did. I brought some beer that we made. It was canned by yours truly. So,
when you say yours truly, your hands?
These two mitts right here.
Very nice.
They're very well manicured. You guys can't see that, but they look lovely.
So what do you have for us there?
I've got a few things. So right now we've got nine different of our own drafts. I've got one that's called, very befitting for you all, Facer Radio. That's our 5%.
I resemble that.
Yeah, 5% pale ale. I've got Simple Minds, which is our New England style IPA. I've got Bambalan, which is Puerto Rican slang for lazy bum, also probably befitting this group, which is a Helles 5%. I've got one called Rock Steady that is an English mild 3.5% for the folks who like to drink all day on the green. And I've got Striwi is a fruited sour, strawberry and kiwi. Everyone loves that. I've got a Saison called Don Maria. I've got another beer that's named after my third daughter called Ophelia, and it's a sour beer called that's a Berliner Weiss. And then I also have Let There Be Darkness, which is an imperial milk stout that you'd have a hard time picking which club after you've had one or two of those. It's 9.5%. And then I've got Delicate Heart that is a grisette that's a French-style beer similar to a Saison that's 5.5%.
Terrific.
Thank you. They're great, by the way.
Well, I can attest. Jason, I can attest. We actually had lunch on the way into the studio at Good Word Brewery.
Nice.
And I had a Donna Maria myself.
And I had a Delicate Heart.
I thought that there was a couple of people we had to kick out, so it's good to see you guys again. Sorry for the inconvenience.
It's not the first place we've been kicked out.
No, I'm kidding, of course.
And the Donna Maria named after your grandmother? Did I read that on the menu?
So my business partner, Ryan, who you might have seen at the bar, he was doing some work there. His grandmother is Donna, and mine is Maria. So, yeah, that's where the hyphen comes from.
Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for bringing the brew. And yeah. I'd certainly have one if somebody wants to crack one of those open.
Yeah, if you don't mind. I'm
and we will visit with you more later about Good Word, Todd.
Cool.
Mike is here, not only as I said, the Director of Operations for the Atlanta Beer Festivals. And I meant to say, a couple episodes ago, we were loaded with golf. Today we're loaded with beer. But Mike is a 2-handicapper. Correct, Mike?
That's right.
And
former college golfer.
Excellent. So he has vast golf experience and knowledge that he's going to lend to this program.
Happy to. Absolutely.
And glad you're here. Couple things that stuck out to me or things I read this week from a golf perspective. One was, as we approach the FedEx playoffs, there are 13 PGA Tour players who have made the FedEx playoffs in each of the first 11 years. I found that staggering. The problem is I can't tell you who they are because I couldn't find the list of those players. But I found it interesting.
Yeah, that's actually it really is. With only are you saying made the playoffs?
The playoffs,
or made the top
125. The top 125.
Okay, that makes a little more sense. I was going to say to get to the top 30, 13 out of 30 would be
correct. Right.
Yeah, that would
but
be a
11 years in a row is still pretty impressive. And there's some names that are certainly not on that list.
Well, it really
like
is.
Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods, he was injured for 2 or 3 years, I guess, what it ended up being. And early on, like say a Vijay Singh probably had the first 4 or 5, and then he's fallen off. But this would have been a much better segment if you had the 13 names.
Trust me, I did exhaustive research trying to find the list.
We can make up a few more if you guys want to. I love naming things.
Jim Furyk had to be one of them.
Steve Stricker came to mind.
Steve Stricker's had great success.
It's guys who are old enough to have been playing because you think a Spieth hasn't been out there 11 years. Rory? He's close. Probably close to 11 years. But, of course, he played in Europe the first couple. I don't know if he was even in the FedEx for the first couple of years of his career. Yep. But so That would be an interesting list if we had it.
Well, I can tell you another guy who has played 11 years on tour and probably has been in the playoffs 11 straight years. Dustin Johnson. And
I would agree with that.
I'm going to admit to you that I was never a huge Dustin Johnson fan. Didn't have any particular reasons why. Just I thought there were other guys I always rooted for when he was in the mix. He won 2 weeks ago for his 19th tour victory. I'm going to read you a list of players who don't have 19 tour victories. Justin Thomas, who also just won. Justin Rose. Sergio Garcia. Jordan Spieth. Bubba Watson. Jason Day. Adam Scott. Rory McIlroy. Jim Furyk. He's already ahead of all of those guys on the career victories list. I have a newfound respect for him.
Well, he's the only guy. He's won a tournament, I think, 9 years in a row.
11 years in a row. That's why I knew 11.
11 years in a row. Okay.
Yep.
That's amazing. So to have that type of consistency, and he's had off the field problems as well. One thing that I think is a benefit to him, and maybe one of the reasons why you don't like him. I'm pretty sure he's dumb as rocks.
Don't hold back. Tell us how you really.
So, little anecdote. We're watching the U.S. Open that he won, and I think the was at Oakmont, and we're watching it at a bar. I mean, that part of the story doesn't matter. The year before is when he three putted against Jordan at Chambers Bay,
yeah.
And the greens were an issue that week. But I remember a buddy of mine. That I was watching it with, he said, "Oh, I wonder if it's in his head." And I looked at him, I said, "He doesn't remember," which is a great thing in golf. I actually brought this up with coaches and sports psychologists when I was playing competitively. I had this crazy golf memory. It's faded out over the years with age and beer consumption. But when I was in college, I remembered every shot I hit, and it was a detriment because I remembered the bad ones. And so sometimes I would be over a shot thinking, oh, yeah, don't do that again. And that's a bad thing. But Dustin Johnson, I don't think he has that problem. He just – ball, hit, go is basically what he's got. And I think it's a benefit to him.
I agree 100%. I have a mantra. I've told Jason many, many times, the most important shot is the next one. Similar to beer.
That's right. That's the most important beer as well.
So you have a good point. It's a very good point.
But he's amazing too. I mean, his athleticism – his workout regime, they talk about that at golf all the time. You know, if Jack and Arnie, they weren't working out, and this guy, he can dunk a basketball. Yeah. He could probably play other sports. I'm not sure if he did as a kid or not, but obviously he's picked the right one. He's made a lot of money, and he can just absolutely kill the ball.
He needs to win one more major, just to solidify his legacy.
I think, yeah, he's got time.
Because, again, the list I just read,
is he 33?
Half of these guys
have more. What's his age? Is he 32, 33?
Well, he's kind of coming 11 into years, his prime. Yeah, probably early 30s.
He's kind of coming into his prime, so he's got some time.
For sure. I mean, Sergio didn't win his first major until he was 35, 36. Phil Mickelson was
another
player,
guy who waited a bit.
Born in 1984, June 22nd, actually. He's 34 years old right now.
So he just had a birthday. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got eight more years of his prime, and the fact that he hits the ball so far. I mean, that was the thing. Well, two things as you get older. Getting older, it gets harder to get up in the morning. You're sore, those type of things. Which, if he keeps up his exercise regimen, that should be all right. And then distance, that was the big thing, which isn't as big of an issue anymore. But as guys got older in the 80s. You know, you could really see the distance drop off, and that put him at a disadvantage. But, you know, if he keeps the same swing or a similar swing, he's not going to have a problem with distance. And so he could play well, you know, well into his 40s for sure.
Todd, you're awfully quiet over there.
Well, yeah, this isn't my sport. I wanted to keep interrupting you guys to, like, lay a joke on, but I was like, I don't know anything with this stuff. I kept wanting to say, like, if golf had some defense, it would be a lot more exciting. And your guy
the Caddyshack 2 defense.
He would have picked a different different sport if that was the case. But anyway.
Beer is the defense. In
beer
golf.
Is the defense, yeah.
Right, for the weekend warrior,
right.
For sure.
Yes, as we discussed in the last episode, it's not allowed on the PGA Tour. So, quick question for you, Mike, as a former college golfer. What's your stance and position on the lengthening of golf courses and just taking them to absurd lengths, especially on tour, but even...
Well, yeah, that's funny. That was going to be one of the sports radio questions I asked you, so it's great that you brought that up. And I'm really in the middle between, you know that there's a problem, but is it something we really want to fix, is kind of where I'm at. Because the average golfer hasn't gained... you know, has only gained a marginal amount of distance.
Right.
And golf is still very, very hard for everyone else. So you don't want to do anything that's going to make golf harder for the average player. And then the tricky part about, you know, curtailing the game for the pros is the reason we like to watch them is just, you know, how far they hit it, how awesome they are. And so if we were to give them a golf ball that went as far as, you know, we hit it, or, you know, the average golfer hits it, making the golf courses more playable without having to add distance, would it be as impressive? And the answer, I think, is probably no. It would kind of be weird for, you know, a guy like me, a 40-year-old ex-college golfer, if I could hit it as far as Dustin Johnson does on the, you know, with a different golf ball. The short answer is I think there's not much we can do or should do. And the tricky part is in golf course architecture, which I'm not an expert on, but there are a lot of things. There's some courses, Harbortown. Is it Harbortown in Hilton Head?
Yep.
Which,
Pete Dye.
Yeah, which is a modest length golf course. They haven't had an opportunity to really add a whole lot of length. And they're able to, with the natural defenses, the trees, the bunkers, water hazards, et cetera, remain a competitive championship golf course without – going to 8,000 yards.
Right.
So maybe that's more where some courses need to go. But if you have the room and you know, that, which they've certainly shown, what did Aaron Hills play last year in the U.S. Open? 7,700 yards or something.
7,778?
Yeah, it was nuts. But then the big guys and Koepka ended up at 1,700 because the wind didn't blow.
Right.
That was the other thing. Right. So some of those courses, it's tricky. I just came back. I played had a guy's trip to Bandon Dunes, which was awesome.
Please tell us about that.
Well, it was wonderful. I mean, we had a great time. There was 12 of us, many of us connected to Emory, which is where I went to college, and we had a great ringleader who organized the whole thing for us, and it was really good. And we stayed on campus there, and it was great. But 40-mile-an-hour winds all 4 days. Just brutal. The caddies kept kind of saying, like, man, we haven't seen it like this in a while. And I actually just checked because, you know, they might have been trying. I was like, oh, maybe they're trying to make us feel good because we're not, you know, we're not shooting our handicaps. Let's put it that way. I checked the weather app the other day, and it was, 65 and 14 miles an hour. And I was like, oh, that would have been great if we had some of that. So, but that was all this was to say, like, the course obviously is more difficult when you have 40-mile-an-hour winds
right.
versus 14 or zero. And we saw a little bit of that at Carnoustie,
yep.
you know, those first couple days, and then it got a little progressively harder on, yep. on the Sunday. So it's tricky. So just to throw it back on you,
sure.
did you have a solution or a thought on the lengthening of courses? Or?
I don't care for it. And for one of the reasons is not in every single tournament, but almost consistently when you watch a tournament, there is a short hole that jumps up and bites golfers. And to your point about Harbortown, you don't have to have 600, 700 yard par fives. You can have good challenging golf holes and golf courses that are of a reasonable length if you just tighten the fairways a little bit, add a bunker here or there, just to make those guys think a little more about whether they just want to hit it as far as they possibly can and then have some kind of wedge in.
So I play a course, we talked before the show started, Smoke Rise, where it's not very long from the member tees, we'll call it 6,300 yards, which is very reasonable. But I only hit, or a longer hitter, can only hit driver three, maybe four times.
I caught that you're a long hitter.
Right. I was just saying, you know. I'm amateur long. I'm not pro long. So that's the difference, you know. The guys I was playing with on Sunday, they were giving me, oh, you know, wow, and, you know, look at that or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I'm 40, 50, 60 yards behind Dustin Johnson,
right,
but,
right.
you know, I'm past you guys. But
maybe you should be playing farther back, the tips.
That would be one way to do it. But I'm a social golfer. I'm not going to be that guy. In college, I was that guy. But, you know, play with my dad and his friends, and I'm like, okay, I'm going back
I'm
here.
I'm going all the way back.
I'm not doing that. I'm not being the one guy, especially we were playing a sixum. So I'm not going to be the one guy out of six because that just wouldn't work.
Right.
But anyway, it makes the course play longer because you can't dominate the shorter holes with a driver and have a flip wedge in. You got to hit 4-iron or hybrid on a lot of holes, which makes it, in how the course plays longer. And so what the PGA Tour might have to do is start picking courses that can, adapt that way without – having guys just hit driver, 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 driver.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'll have to see.
Yeah.
But, or as I was saying, we do nothing. And they just shoot, if they shoot lower scores, they shoot lower scores. That's kind of, how
well,
it ends up working sometimes.
At the end of the day, the scores don't necessarily seem to be getting that much lower, at least winning scores and average scores for the season and that type of thing. I mean, probably a half a stroke compared to 20 years ago, but
they still
have to put the ball in the hole.
Here's a very real example. So Firestone, Tiger still has the record from 2000 or 2001.
Right.
I just heard him mention that while I was watching the broadcast, and it kind of took me back. Like, wow, nobody's done better on the same course.
Yep.
Similar conditions, same time every year. No one's done better in 17 years. It's like, okay, maybe we don't have an issue. And I think they've added a few tee boxes, but that's always been a big golf course.
It's been a long golf course for sure.
And tight.
Yep.
And so a lot of guys will, hit lower clubs. Of course, Rory famously driver on every hole, and it's worked out well for him. I think he's won once or twice there, but not this year. But that's one, it's kind of giving you the choice. You can bomb it and go find it or play a little smarter and
right
out of the fairway. So,
do you have a pick for the PGA Championship this week?
I'm working on it. So I'm in a pick 'em league with
my dad.
You've
got 30 minutes.
I'm in a pick 'em league with my dad, so he's going to call me. He's probably going to call me. I got my ringer off, but he's probably going to call me sometime while we're recording to talk about our pick. I hate to pick a guy who just won last week, but Justin Thomas seems like a good pick. But then you kind of go, oh, does anybody really win back-to-back? Of course, in this pick'em thing, when you're picking one out of 156
right
guys, anything can, in right theory, happen. So he's a good choice.
How many will you be picking in your pick'em?
We just do one.
Just one
just
player?
One, yeah. And it's one of those ones where you can only use each player once throughout the year.
Okay, gotcha.
The other thing, I don't know much about the course. You know anything about the course? Is it a long hitter course, or
is a longer golf course. I've read a couple of things that say a big hitter is going to be the winner this week. They are having problems with the greens. Although it was raining there this morning, I actually got a report from someone on site at Bellerive, and it was raining. So maybe that'll soften things up a little bit. But
oh yeah, I got that report from Rory on Facebook. He was taking video. Interesting tidbit that I heard the other day. The three major winners all wear Nike clothes. So maybe that's a thing. You got to pick somebody who wears Nike.
I think Tony Finau wears Nike.
Oh, yeah.
That's my pick.
Yeah, didn't you guys already pick that in the previous podcast?
We sure did.
That brings Rory into play, brings Tiger into play. And then, of course, the guys who've already won, Koepka.
Tiger went 73-73 again on the weekend.
Well, and it's funny. We picked him in our pick 'em league, and I wish I'd known he'd been on vacation the week before. they mentioned that on PTI
yes
last night, and they basically kind of blasted him a little bit. They're like, "You're in the middle of the season here. You
can't
got a big
get
tournament.
Ready for a major
you got,
going on
you
vacation.
Got, you got the month of October, November, December, January. You got a lot of vacation time coming up, and he chose to hit the beach, or I don't even know where he went, but." I wish I'd known that before we picked him.
Well, we're going to talk a little more golf in just a second as Mike kicks off our birdie segment. And our birdie segment today is brought to us by our good friends and partners at the First Tee of Atlanta. The First Tee of Atlanta is a youth development organization that teaches kids life skills using the game of golf. And I think it's important to focus on they are teaching life skills using the game of golf. It's not just golf lessons. It's not just teaching them golf. Youth are learning the 9 core values and healthy habits all while learning the game of golf. And those core values are honesty, integrity, sportsmanship, respect, confidence, responsibility, perseverance, courtesy, and judgment. And Jason could certainly use a brush up in any of those nine core values. But we appreciate and love everything First Tee of Atlanta is doing. If you want more information on how to volunteer or donate or enroll your child in the First Tee program, please visit www.thefirstteeatlanta.org. Again, that's www.thefirstteeatlanta.org. At the First Tee of Atlanta, we build good golfers, but even better people. So, Mike, before I get back to you, Todd.
Yes.
We were talking just briefly before the broadcast that you, even though you're part of our beer segment, you do have some golf history.
Some connection to golf. Connection. Not much. As you guys were talking, I was just like, man, I have no idea. But I will say that it does seem odd to, like, lengthen the course. Like, for a golfer, I would imagine you're playing against, you know, yourself. Like you mentioned, you know, your old habits or if you have a great memory. The course, of course, and then you're – the competitors, so it doesn't make sense. No one lengthens the football field or anything like that, so it doesn't seem like it's necessary. That was my two cents.
Well, but it's, you know what it comes down to, and we were mentioning this about another course, is everyone wants to believe, and when I say everyone, the members of a golf course, you know, the folks that quote-unquote own the golf course, want to believe that their course is tough.
Sure.
Is hard. You know, these guys are going to have trouble on our course. And so when the tour pros come out and they shoot really low scores and embarrassed, probably not the right word, but humble the golf course in a way, then the members get upset about it. And so they want to say, all right, we don't want these guys to shoot 20 under. We want them to shoot 5 under.
Right.
And so it's kind of an ego thing. It's a weird, you know, there's a lot of dynamics, yeah, you know, involved in that. And that's one thing that, you know, you're going to have those human emotions in golf. And some people, you know, translate them in different ways, and that can lead to some of that.
Yeah. But yeah, as far as my golf connection, I grew up in LaGrange, Georgia, where Tad Moore was working for Max Fly when I first met my one of my good friends, Justin Bauman. And it was crazy because they lived like in the best house in the country club, and it was amazing, super sweet guy, very humble and very quiet, but he's always working on clubs. And so Justin, I think we were 14, 15 when we met. He was golfing all the time, and his little brother was golfing, and these guys were, like, really good, his little brother especially. And we'd go down the green, and, you know, we were knuckleheads, so we were, you know, drinking and stuff like that. But I had a lot of fun out there. It was good to be around that family. They were awesome. You know, he branched out on his own, and that didn't go quite as well in the beginning, but he started making the Hickory clubs, which I guess have come back around the last 15 or so years. So he's still doing that. He lives in Selma, Alabama, I believe now, or somewhere around there. But, you know, he's a super great guy, and he's, you know, I don't know, he's awesome.
I used a Max Fly Tad Moore putter for about 10 years.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
Yeah, it didn't work.
I'll let him know.
Please.
I actually had one of those in college. When you said Tad Moore, I thought there was a couple of young pros golfers that had similar names, and then when you just mentioned that, I had that putter as well. So
yeah, he's probably in his 70s now, so he was, you know, he was up there when I met him. But anyway,
My problem with it is the ball always seemed to need to go just a tad more.
Ha! Look at that!
Wow!
You didn't see that coming, did you?
Got nothing from
anybody. Are you putting with that putter again? Because I seem to remember some of those putts this week.
Low hanging fruit in this crew, it seems. All right, exactly. Pull up my bazooka jokes.
So, Mike, we touched on the fact you played some college golf. Where was that, and how did you get started playing golf?
So, I started playing as a kid, but not real seriously. We had this little community golf course up in Annapolis, Maryland, that had sand greens. There was only one or two courses in the country left with them. Very low maintenance. It was a clay base. You put sand trap sand on top, and you could smooth it out with like a welcome mat, like a wicker welcome mat, and you could smooth it out. And then if you watered it, like on tournament days. Now this course was.
How would they roll? Compare it to some kind of grass.
So if you smoothed them out with the mat and then watered them, and so the sand kind of sat down and it wouldn't dune up. Now in the afternoon, it was kind of like spike marks back in the day. It would kind of get duney. Now you could smooth it out with your putter or your foot. It wasn't great, but it was a very low maintenance, low cost golf course because it was just a little community thing. And we're talking, it was 1900 yards, par 32. You know, so it wasn't anything serious. But as a 7-year-old, 8-year-old, it's perfect. It's kind of like Charlie Yates, you know, here in town. you know, as a good little starter, first team right. type course or whatever. But really wanted to play in high school, wanted to play on the team, went to a small high school where if you had a set of clubs, you were on the team. That was pretty much the only requirement. And started out freshman year shooting in the 120s by the end of the season. So May, I'd shot in the 90s a bunch of times. By the end of that summer, broke 80 for the first time. And the next summer, broke 70 for the first time. And was off and running and got recruited to play a couple places, including Emory here in Atlanta. And just came down and had a great time playing college golf. And then played, pretty much played all summer long, played a bunch of tournaments, played some really good national tournaments and with some major championship winners, even from your list there. Adam Scott, played around with him, played with Aaron Baddeley, played with Jason Duffner, Matt Kuchar. So those are my four biggest playing partners.
So who was your favorite tour pro that you played with?
Well, so the best story, if there is a story, was with Adam Scott. He was a rising junior. I was a rising senior. We were playing at the Porter Cup in Niagara Falls, New York. And it was an invitational tournament, but they had like six spots available for a qualifier. And so I went over there coming from another tournament about a month prior, shot 69, made it into the tournament. And after two rounds, it was a no-cut event. And so after two rounds, I shot 75-75, which was, it was kind of my average back then. And Adam Scott did as well. So Charlie Hoffman, who was his teammate, there was a little social event. And I knew who these guys were because I'm following Golf Week and I'm seeing, I know who they were. They don't know who I am, of course. And so Charlie Hoffman asked Adam what his tee time is. And Adam says, 8:10. We're the third group off. And Charlie Hoffman just starts laughing in his face. Like, what? 8:10? What? And so Adam Scott said, I just had two bad days, man. Of course, I can't do an Australian accent. But so I'm sitting there just kind of like, okay, great.
Right.
So we, at 8:10 the next morning, we go out and play, and Adam Scott birdies the first three holes. I mean, he was working with Butch Harmon, who was out in Vegas, and his swing pretty much looked like Tiger back in the day. And he's hitting it super long. This is before the Pro V, so he's hitting the Titleist Professional 300, 310, which today would be 330, 340. Right. I mean, just killing it. And a couple holes later, I'm just trying to make conversation, but I say, college in Las Vegas, that's got to be fun. He looks at me, looks away, and he just says, I don't really like college. I don't think I'm going back. And this is like August 5th, I mean, college is coming up. And sure enough, 6 months later, he went. He was working with Butch, and he didn't go back to college. And 6 months later, he's on the European tour. At 19 years old, and I'm like, play with that guy.
But would he know who you are today?
No, okay. No chance. In fact, at the tour championship, I think the year either he won or he was in contention. My buddy kept saying, "Oh man, he keeps walking by. He's not even saying hi to you." But yeah, no, there's no chance he'd know who I am. But that was pretty cool. And then I remember when he won, I guess he won the Masters. I remember calling my dad. I said, my resume just got better. He's like, what are you talking about? I said, I've now played with a major championship winner.
That's right.
So there we go.
Absolutely.
So he's helped my game out.
Who was the worst tour professional that you played with?
Jason Duffner wasn't cool as a 19-year-old. That's all.
That's it?
Didn't seem like he had much of a nice personality on Faraday, actually. And that's just a year or two ago he was on.
Well, and it was a bad situation for me. So it was a tournament up in Rochester, New York, which was great. Weather was awesome. Donald Ross course up there called Monroe Country Club. And we both made the cut on the number. So we were there was like two twosomes that went out instead of threesomes or whatever. So it was me and him and his buddy. Roland Thatcher was his name. He actually spent some time on.
Yeah,
he's been on the PGA Tour and the web.com. Had missed the cut, so he was his caddy. So we're playing a twosome, but it's like a onesome and a twosome because those guys were college teammates, and so they were hanging out. And I didn't have a great day, but at least it was over quick. I did remember I birdied 18 to shoot 79, which is better than 80. And made it to lunch, pretty early, which was nice. But yeah, he wasn't my favorite. But he won a major, so yep. I got two major champions, which is really helping my resume.
You hobnob with major champions,
exactly.
Is what I'm hearing. What is your best golf memory ever?
Oh, wow. Just the two that popped in my head, because, you know, we could talk about a bunch of them, as I'm sure you could as well. 2001 father-son trip to Scotland. You know, I was a recent college golfer, so I was still playing good. Had one of the better rounds, shot a 66 at King's Barn in the rain and fog. Luckily, we had a good caddy who could give us some good targets. And then competitively, we played Torrey Pines two times at spring break. UC San Diego hosted a tournament out there. And it was really cool because it was a month after the Buick
right.
was out
right.
there. And of course, Tiger, you know, Tiger's winning that thing every year back in the 99 time frame when we played. And they gave us the pin sheets, and they said Buick Invitational. So it was the same pin, same tees. Now, this is before they redid the course for the U.S. Open, so it wasn't as long. But I shot a 70 on the Sunday setup. And so that was always pretty cool because there was a little story behind it.
Right, right.
And ended up finishing, you know, third in the tournament or something. So that was fun.
Nice. And your favorite golf course in the world? Kings Barn's got to be up there.
It is. We had better weather and more fun at Turnberry on that trip. So I really enjoyed that. Of course, now it's a Trump course, so there's some politics involved. But back then it was, you know, owned by some Scottish guys,
right,
I'm sure.
Right.
No, I love old golf courses. So Donald Ross courses, country clubs that I don't have enough money to get into. You know, East Lake is a good example of a, even though it's a modern golf course now, it feels like an old golf course. You know,
right.
tees are near the greens. I love playing East Lake whenever I get a chance to do that. So, you know, I'm not giving you a great answer, but like that style, because just like beer, I mean, the next one, you know, that's my real answer on golf. Just, you know, let me tee it up. Let's go
play again.
But yeah, I'd love when I can get on old course, you know, especially up in the Northeast when you can find a good old country club. Again, usually it's hard to get on, or you got to know somebody or something. Just love those courses.
Tree lined fairways. Yeah.
Yeah. Love those. And then I enjoy some links golf. I mean, we had a great time at Bandon Dunes, and, you know, anytime you bring that element of wind, you know, it's just, you got to get creative. It just makes it so tough. But sometimes that works out well. You know, you shoot a good score on a day when it's blowing.
Right.
You know, you feel like you accomplished something.
Right. Well, before we let you go, move on. Tell us about Atlanta Beer Festivals. Love to hear your background there and some of the things that you've got going
sure.
with that organization.
Yeah, this is a great time to be here talking about it. We've got a really exciting fall schedule. We tend to take some time off in July. It's just too hot to do anything. We have our summer beer fest in June, and then that's a two month break until our summer wine festival, which is coming up this weekend at City Winery. So we have two brands. We've got Atlanta Beer Festivals and we've got Atlanta Wine Festivals. So we marry the two genres, I guess, of drinking, and kind of have something for everybody. And of course, we always have wine at our beer events and beer at our wine events. Now, of course, you know, there's going to be more beer than wine and vice versa. But we get it covered. If you're not into wine, we got you covered with some beer.
That's smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
It works out well. A lot of marriages where
exactly.
husband drinks beer, the
exactly.
wife drinks wine.
It's been interesting. When we started in really 2010, 2011 timeframe, it was more men than women. And now, in the beer world, it's about 50-50. There's a lot of, I'm sure Todd knows, a lot of women drinking beer now.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But on the wine side, we're definitely female heavy. And you know, just because more women like wine than men do. But it works out really well. What we see is actually a lot of women put groups together. They do, you know, girls' day out type of thing. And it leads to a really fun environment for our wine events. So we've got that coming up, like I said, this week, the Summer Wine Fest. We've got two great beer fests coming up this fall. Old Fourth Ward on September 22nd. That's at the skate park in historic Fourth Ward Park. And then we got the great Atlanta Beer Fest. We had that at Turner Field for 6 years, went to SunTrust last year, and now we're back at what is now Georgia State Stadium.
Okay.
That's on October 13th. That's going to be great.
And how so last year, how many people were at the Great Atlanta Beer Festival?
So when we went up to SunTrust, it's a little a smaller spot up there. You know, the stadium's not quite as big. We didn't have as much access to space, so we had about 2,500 people. 2 years ago, we closed down Turner Field. After the season, they let us put the beer fest on the field because they didn't need it anymore. Previous years, the groundskeeper, you know, nixed that idea real quick. But we ended up having 4,500 people out for that one. So hopefully we can get a good crowd. We'll be back on the bricks, as I say, at Georgia State Stadium, which is actually a really good spot. There's electricity up there for our beer trailers, the big TV for college football, you know, the one that's behind that center field screen.
Yep.
And a natural stage there for the band, and it's a really good spot, and some good shade as well with the, you know, with the stadium.
I'm a fan of shade.
Absolutely.
What's and the date on that again?
That's October 13th.
Very good.
And we'll make sure to include that on our social media links as well.
That'd be great. Yeah. And then just one more to mention. You know, I got a whole big list here, but you know, kind of keeping it within the next couple months. A brand new event we're using it as our fall wine event is the Atlanta Mimosa Festival. So just a lot of women drinking champagne and orange juice. It's going to be awesome. That's on September 29th at Atlantic Station in the event space.
You should do beer mosses too, Mike.
We probably will, yeah. We'll,
I love those things.
We've got a good friend of mine runs Monk's Mead, so I think we'll do some mead mosses.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll figure out what style beer do you think works best?
I think like acidic wheat beers like Berliner Weiss.
And, okay.
You know, anything lighter. Mixes pretty well with grapefruit juice or orange juice. So.
Gotcha.
But yeah, using Berliner Weiss is what we would drink.
We'll certainly have that option. We're going to do some different like flavored orange juices. There's like orange mango, orange pineapple. We're trying to kind of source them out now. Mm-hmm. Orange tangerine, you know, some different flavors just because since we're focusing on this one drink, even though, again, we'll still have wine, we'll still have beer, we'll probably even have Bloody Marys and a vodka cocktail. So everyone's covered.
Perfect. I was waiting on the Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
pretend that I don't know what mead is.
It is alcohol fermented from honey. It's actually one of the oldest forms of alcohol. The Vikings were doing it in the earlier times, 700s or something. Justin Schoendorf is his name. He runs Monk's Mead here in town. He figured out a way to brew it like beer. A lot of mead is made like honey. Made like wine. You know, no carbonation. But he figured out he brews it just like beer. Adds carbonation. It kind of tastes like there is a champagne feel to it. There you go. I mean, that's your
okay.
Yeah, so honey. I mean, you kind of got to taste it.
Yeah. I've had some for sure, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't had any of his. I think he may be friends with a buddy of mine, Brian Roth, who owns Southern Brewing in Athens.
That's where he's actually contract brewing right now.
Okay, cool.
So
yeah,
there you
that
go.
Makes sense.
That's them. And Southern's actually been a great hookup for him.
Those guys are great.
He's
awesome.
They've got tons of space, and he's been able to add, I think he's adding two or three flavors this year, or he's already introduced them, but you know, he's really starting to ramp up his production.
Yeah,
which has been
they're
great.
Typically a little like higher in alcohol too. I think that
they can be. Yeah. So his stock product, the Monk's Mead, is 13%.
Okay.
But then he's been brewing the last two products. I think he has different names for them. So he doesn't quite call it Monk's Mead Light, but like a 5.5 is kind of his target now.
Gotcha.
As you may or may not know, a lot easier for him to get passed through the federal laws and the taxes and all that when he has that lower alcohol content. Because he's technically a wine, but he's at a brewery facility, and there's a whole bunch of different complicated things.
Same thing with us. Like, I would love to make some cider because people love it, and I end up buying my cider from local folks that are awesome too, Mercier. But, yeah, you can't make cider as a brewery. It falls under the wine license. So,
interesting.
Yeah. It is what it is.
And these meads, pardon the ignorance, but these meads, you drink them standalone, or are they always mixers for something else?
No, yeah, standalone.
Okay, mm-hmm. Just like the ciders, okay.
I mean, the Vikings were not mixing it with orange juice. Come on now.
Yeah. Eric, bring me over the mug and put a little spritzer in there and hold your pinky when you drink it. Yeah, I don't think that was a thing. Do I look pretty with this?
No, I will say, so a couple cocktail-type bars, Bookhouse Pub was a big customer of his, and they put some cocktails together, you know, either mixed in with some vodka and then some juices or, you know, to come up with some unique flavors.
Right.
And I know that's been a thing. But, yeah, you can just drink it straight up for sure.
Nice. Well, this seems like a good segue into the beer segment.
That sounds more like a Coca-Cola, to be honest with you guys.
Mike, work on the beer sound effects. Before we get to Todd, Jason, how can people keep up with Birdies and Beer?
Well, right now we're getting the website up and rolling, and we're going to have a number of great features and functions on there. But until we get that going and to stay live with where we're at on that, make sure you find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, any social media platform that you prefer, we're there. Just look for Birdies and Beer, and you'll find us.
Perfect. So, Todd?
Yes.
Again, have to commend Tara, the bartender, for taking
She's
great
kind
care
of our everything.
Jason and I.
She's awesome. She bartends and manages, and she does our event management. She's amazing.
Good Word Brewing and Public House, a beautiful facility right in downtown Duluth. The name, where's the name come from?
You know, my business partner, Ryan Skinner, and I put a lot of thought into it, and it came from a text message. No, I'm just kidding. we both came from Brickstor Pub, which you guys probably heard of in Decatur. I was there for about 12 years and was the general manager there for 8 of those, and Ryan had previously been at Marriott Hotels running those for about a decade. And came and worked with us for about 5 years as a beer manager. So, you know, for us, we wanted a place that, you know, bespoke of community. And I think that, or we think that Good Word definitely, you know, embodies that, where you're not inundated with neon signs and televisions and that sort of thing. So conversation is more king. And, you know, it's a place where people come and celebrate and commiserate and all of those things in between. So that's kind of what it means. It's about community.
And you are officially owner and brewer. You are still, we joked about it earlier, you're still actively brewing?
Oh, yeah. I am the only person in the brewery. We have a guy named Ryan Haig who I've been training, but he's only able to be back there like once every other week or so. And the plan is to have him back there a little more, so I have a little more free time. But he's one of our bartenders and managers. But he's learning fast, and it's great. But I'm kind of a control freak, so I don't mind being back there quite as much as I am. But yeah, we had a brewer in the beginning, and he was a Canadian fellow. He was a 24-year-old guy, and he was making excellent beer. And as his visa was starting to run out, we didn't realize he was becoming super homesick, and he decided to bounce on us. That was about 5 months ago. So I went from being a home brewer for some years and feeling like I know exactly what I was doing to being thrust into what would feel like you're driving a spaceship. So my first several brews were pretty terrifying and all that, but I went through a myriad of phases where it's like, holy crap, can I do this? Oh my God, we got to find somebody to like, all right, I'm kind of getting the hang of this to like, okay, I can do this to like, all right, we're gonna make awesome stuff. And we just, I never looked back. So, and I love the work too. You know, like I said, I was front of the house for a long, long time, and I still do a little bit of that at Good Word. But for me, just, you know, being able to make something is kind of my conversation to the guests, and I love having it. So
back to the home brewing. What is?
Yeah.
Tell us about your worst home brewing experience.
Oh man, there were so many. So the benefit of making beer on that small scale is you just throw it away, right? When you get bigger, not that we're so big, there's plenty of people who are much, much bigger than us, but it's a lot harder as far as a financial decision to just dump a batch. But yeah, when I first started brewing, I think the first time I brewed, I was terrified to like make the beer. Like I was just scared. So I had some buddies come over and we started cracking beers, and you know, by the end of it, you know, didn't learn anything. It was definitely a little more tipsy than I should have been. And about 3 weeks later, I decided that I was going to throw that beer away. And that was the first batch of beer that I tossed. And I was like, all right, cool. So I got the jitters out of the way and get the mechanics of this. So I'm just read as much as I can and look at as many YouTube videos as I possibly can. And, you know, from there, things just got better and better. But, you know, I didn't stop dumping beer. Honestly, I was able to, you know, wasn't exactly on the up and up, but I was able to put beer at Brickstore from time to time and have people try it out, which was super cool to get like true feedback. But yeah, so definitely had some dumpers.
Speaking of feedback, Face for radio.
Yeah. Oh, it's this is very, very smooth.
Thank you.
I love it.
The Rocksteady is very good as well.
As the Bambalan.
Bambalan, yeah. So
yeah, let me ask a question or two. Yeah. So how long have you been open?
We opened on November 28th, so just a handful of days after Thanksgiving.
Okay. And are you selling outside of your facility, or are you just...
Yeah.
Oh, you are? Okay.
We are, yeah. So, I mean, we do quite a bit of distro. I'm one of those guys that, like, I'll brew as much as I possibly can. And, you know, last week I did four batches of beer, and this week I'll do one or two, and then I'll do another several next week. So I'm trying to brew as much as possible. You know, the trend went from, I can tell you this, from at Brickstore was like keeping beer in a cellar, like your barley wines, your imperial stouts and stuff like that, to like, let's just have super fresh beer. And so now the trend is, you know, hazy IPAs, and 2 weeks old, it's kind of almost too old. So we try to turn those around as quick as we can, as far as getting, you know, keeping some for the pub and getting the rest of it out to the distro so we can keep brewing those beers. But we use Liberator. They're a small boutique brewery and our distributor. And, you know, they work just a handful of folks, and, you know, we love the relationship, and it's been great. So, yeah, we sell all over the place, but no cans. These cans are all just crowlers, so you can buy those from us.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you been doing festivals? Do you want to do festivals?
Yeah, we have been. I did Swanee Beer Fest. We're doing a thing called Dames and Dregs. That's on Saturday. So, yeah, I mean, anytime we can get the beer out there, I love to do it. What's funny is I usually go to these things, and instead of mingling, meeting other people, I just hang around the beer and just talk about the beer to the guests. And, you know, that for me is, I don't know, small talk is one of those things. And I know we're doing a lot of it right now, but I prefer just to, you know, talk to the guests about what we've made and kind of what we're about.
Absolutely. So. Yes. We'll talk after the show.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll definitely get you in, into the fall events. Here's one, I guess, strategy question. So you're less than a year old.
Yeah.
And you brought in 9 beers.
Sure.
Is this the full collection? Do you even have more?
So this is what we have on right now, but over the next handful of days, I'll release 4 more beers. So, yeah.
Wow.
So we'll have, I mean, things are constantly coming on and going off. You know what I mean? Like, if we were a big commercial brewery, we would just, you know, have our 4 to 6 core brands, and then we do, like, seasonal stuff and yada, yada, yada. But the beauty of being a brew pub is I'm able to brew stuff however I want, whenever I want, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of what my follow-up was going to be, is that the old strategy used to be, let's do, you know, 3 or 4 beers, really focus on them, and then you start branching. You know, Sweetwater made, you know, 2 beers for the first 5 years,
yeah,
or whatever it was. Now, of course, different time and obviously different strategy with, sure, the brew pub.
They're doing great.
The owner has a jet.
Yeah.
It now seems to be a bigger thing to just make a whole bunch of stuff, see what works, and if not, you're having fun with it and all that, then that's
absolutely,
that's a fun way to do it, for sure.
Yeah, so we still have kind of a game plan, or I guess I should say, I have kind of a game plan with all the beers and stuff like that. So, you know, we manage a few different yeasts on hand. So we have a London yeast, which we do that English mild that you had, Tim, and then that, actually you hadn't had it yet, but we've got Bebop and Rocksteady. Those are our kind of English brands. Well, I use that same yeast on our hazy IPAs. So I'm able to manage and, like, pull that yeast and reuse and stuff. So we typically have at least 1 IPA, 1 pale ale, 1 fruited sour, our base Berliner Weiss, which is that Ophelia I mentioned earlier, and a handful of just, like, pub beers. So we kind of always have this, you know, gamut of things. So you can expect, like, 3 or 4 to always be the same. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's, like I said, it goes back to that conversation with the guests. Like, I can go out there and talk to them, which is a lot better than just looking on Untappd and having my heart broken from time to time. It is good. I've never rated a beer myself, but I constantly look. Like, every day I'm like, all right, what is this? But luckily we're doing pretty good on that forum as well. It's just like Yelp, you know, like,
sure,
people love and hate Yelp. I think it's a great tool, just like, you know, any other social media platforms. And, you know, you got to pay attention to it, but you can't let it dictate your whole life and business. So I don't do that.
Speaking of a lot of jerks out there.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people that you know, think they're bloggers. But
right.
But I was going to say, social media wise, you definitely should follow our at Good Word Brewing social media. Our Instagram is pretty not bad, I'll tell you that. So we do some videos that are, I guess, pretty fun and sometimes informative. But we have a lot of fun. So I think you guys would get a laugh if you check that out.
And once again, we'll certainly connect to that on our social media as well.
Cool.
Great connections being made here.
Absolutely.
Today.
Yeah.
So one last question. What's the home run? What's the one that you have brewed that has been far and away?
I don't know. I think that they, I mean, I hate to say that, but they've all been pretty well received. I mean, it goes back to kind of like what you're into. Like, some people don't like the hazy IPA and they want like an easy drinking pale ale, right? It's dry, it's drinkable, it's got a ton of citrus aroma without being, you know, overly sweet as far as the finish goes. And then you have, you know, some people who are into sour beer and they want something that's like refreshing and low in alcohol. And then you have people who want that fruited version of that thing, and sometimes they want a ton of fruit. So we do a little bit of all of those. And I don't know, man. What's my favorite beer up brewed so far? I'm not really sure. Maybe the Bambaland. It was pretty cool. It's close to me. My grandma's from Puerto Rico, and you know, like I said, that means lazy bum. It's kind of Puerto Rican slang. And I actually used some plantains in the boil to give that a little bit of flavor. So,
go figure. That's the first one I picked.
Yeah, but you know, it's an easy drinking Helles. It's not something that people are like writing all these reviews about, or these beer geeks are going, "Oh man, you got to try the Helles." It's like, you know, people are crazy about, you know, big imperial stouts and fruited sours and super hazy IPA. So I don't know. I like playing the game a little bit as far as brewing those kind of beer geek beers. And then I also like brewing stuff that we can sit around and drink. But, you know, for me, making super clean, delicious lager type beer is kind of, you know, that's what I like to do, you know, but you have to do the other part, right? To be able to do that. So, but, yeah.
Well, very good. Well, I've got, We're almost out of time, but I've just got a few questions for both of you. Our listeners, I think, want to get to know you even a little bit more. So we've got some very in-depth questions that we want to ask you.
I'm very tall and very good-looking. I think we can all attest I'm well-groomed. Are those the questions you were going to ask him?
No, but thank you for adding that feedback. No, first question, peanut butter.
Okay.
Crunchy or creamy?
Creamy.
Yeah, I'd go creamy.
Wow, Jason?
Yeah, as a kid I was crunchy, but I'm smoother now as an older guy, so I'm going creamy.
Mike?
Neither.
You don't like peanut butter?
Jelly.
Oh, jelly.
I'm the only crunchy guy. I don't know how I feel about that. Ice, cubed or crushed?
I think I would say crushed. Yeah,
definitely crushed.
With a fountain drink, crushed for sure.
Cubed.
I'm cubed as well. I didn't want to be alone on that island. And then really this is the most important one. The toilet paper roll. Over the top or underneath?
Over the top.
You know what's funny is I've been trying to pay attention because I saw something on Facebook, but I've put it on both ways. So I don't have a preference. Just as long as it's there.
That's really the key element, yeah, that's for sure.
Yes, and I'm definitely over. And I will switch it at somebody's house if I see it under.
Watch this guy when he comes over, guys.
Over the top. Just moved into a house with my fiancée. She's from underneath, so we've already had our first.
Already a battle.
Yes, already.
And? Any resolution?
Yes. I do like Jason. I change it. And then she changes it back. And then I leave the toilet bowl lid up just to aggravate her more.
That's so rude. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here. This has been fun. Mike DiLeonardo again, Atlanta Beer Festivals. How do people keep in touch with you, Mike?
Well, so yeah, we've got AtlantaBeerFestivals.com, at Atlanta Beer Festivals on all the social. We really only keep up with Facebook and Instagram, giving up on Twitter. And I don't think we're too old for Snapchat and whatnot. But and then we also have Atlanta Wine Festival.
What's Whatnot? I'm not familiar with Whatnot. Is that a new one?
That's, you know, the rest of them. There's WhatsApp, but we're not on that either. So also Atlanta Wine Festivals and at Atlanta Wine Festivals on Instagram and Facebook.
And Todd DiMatteo of Good Word Brewing and Public House.
Yes, sir.
And
present.
I know you've already mentioned, but tell us again the Instagram.
It's at Good Word Brewing. Also, one other thing. We're doing a beer dinner over at our neighbors. They're called Nuna. They're an Asian-inspired I guess bistro, but they're going to do some pairings with our beers. It's five courses, paired up with their food on Thursday. We're calling that Culture Vulture Beer Dinner. So still time to get a few tickets to that event on Thursday.
And for those in and around Gwinnett County, what are the hours that the public house is open?
So we're open every day for lunch except for Monday. We open Monday at 5, and then every other day we open at 11:30, and we close at midnight.
Every day?
Every day, and then Friday and Saturday open until 1, but I'm gone long before then. I'm almost 40. I got 3 kids, so I got to get out of there.
How old?
I've got a just turned 11-year-old. I've got a 8-year-old and a 17-month-old, all girls.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're cute. Yeah. Noisy, but cute.
I hear you. Many thanks to the First Tee of Atlanta again. Thanks to Mike Salmon. Thanks to Jason Grady. Until next time, hit them straight.